This week, during our spring fundraiser here at KMXT, we're doing a special interview series on young entrepreneurs and budding businesses in town. KMXT is your community radio station, and we believe in the importance of community support and lifting each other up as we reach our goals. I'm your host, Amelia Eagle, and up next is a phone call I recorded with Nick Mangini, owner of a local kelp farm. Hey, Nick. This is Amelia.
Hi, Amelia.
Hey, how's it going?
Not bad.
I was going to start off with asking who you are and the name of your business and what it is.
My name's Nick Mangini. I've lived in Kodiak for about 19 years now. I grew up in Sitka before that. The name of my business is Kodiak Island Sustainable Seaweed. And we've been running a kelp farm for 5 years now.
How did you get the idea for running or starting a kelp farm?
Well, funny enough, my wife did a radio show called Fish Radio with Lady Welch for a number of years. And one of the stories that she covered was kelp farms, and they're growing in popularity on the East Coast, and outlined what kelp farming was and all that it encompassed. And at the same time as that, her brother decided to put in for the first permitted kelp farm in Alaska, in Larsen Bay. So with a week left in the permitting deadline, I decided to try to put one in front of town. And luckily, her brother, Eric O'Brien, had kind of put together a half of a permit for here in town. So I had a bunch of the stuff that I didn't really know how to do. Like, there's just the permitting part of it can be pretty tough. They're making it easier now, but in the beginning they had lots of questions that I had no idea how to answer that he had already figured out how to answer. So that simplified the whole permitting process for me. So I changed the area that he had picked to a different area. My kelp site is located right outside of Trident Basin. But between town and Popoff Island, it's just inside of Popoff Island. That protects it from most of the wind, except for like the wind events that we had the other day. That's about the only area where my site is really exposed. So after I put in all the permit stuff, got it in the week time frame that I had, and submitted it. And I was in California squid fishing at the time, so I started to research where I could sell the kelp, because that was like a big part of it. Obviously, you can't just grow something and not have a market. So I got lucky and searched out this guy, Bo Perry, who had a company called Premium Oceanic at the time, and since they have turned into Blue Evolution. Premium Oceanic has their own algae farm in Ensenada, Mexico, where they basically have a big raceway that's above ground. And it doubles in size every day. It's kind of like the stuff you would imagine in a frog pond, little green specks. But they harvest that for a number of reasons. It has a lot of good nutritional value, and they do a lot of cool stuff with it. They make noodles. They have a popcorn that's seasoned with it now. So excited to see where they end up going with the kelp and brown algae we're growing here.
Are there other types of seaweeds that you're interested in growing, or is it just going to be mostly those two products?
Well, they're not using any of the kelp that we're growing right now for those two products. That's just kind of two examples of what they're doing with their algae. Right now they're mostly just blanching, cutting, and freezing our kelp, and then just selling it to people that want to use it as, you know, for any function, really. Some people are using it for, you know, you could use it for cosmetics. You can use it as a food. There's literally endless amounts of things that you can do with kelp. They're looking into bioplastics in the future. They're trying to do biofuels. Right now, Blue Evolution's pretty focused on the food, and they have a new product that's like a puree. It looks like the little packets of chia seeds that you can get in the produce department, or like garlic, like a real mushed up garlic. It's basically the same idea as that. It's shelf stable until you open it, and then you have to refrigerate it. It comes in a little package, and you squeeze it out into anything. We've been using it in, like, dips and salmon dip. It's really good, but you can put it in virtually anything, and it gives you a lot of the iodine and all of the things kelp's known for providing nutritionally.
So they're selling it at the stores locally in town here?
Nope, they have not started. They have promised that they're going to leave a lot more of their product here this year. I think it'll help also that I think they're going to try to do some of the packaging and processing of it here as a test run. But so far, it's mostly been like a real small scale test run to see the, you know, the amount of interest they could get for that product and stuff like that. So it'll be cool to see our kelp and some things that are here in town.
I'm really excited about that. I don't remember the name of that company. What's that company that has the like kelp salsas and stuff they were selling at Cost Savers recently? I forgot the name of it, but I mean that was really good salsa.
Barnacle. Yeah.
Yeah.
See, they're using all bull kelp, and most of that's actually wild harvested.
Okay.
So we're trying to get more on the farmed end of things where we're not taking something that's naturally growing. They got like a governor's permit for that. I think, I don't know. I saw that there was one other company in Sitka doing the similar thing with the kelp pickles. There has been some people that have tried to grow bull kelp. I think that it's going to be a couple more years before it really gets figured out.
Yeah, what's like the...
The grow season's a lot different. It's a lot longer to get, you know, like a mature bull kelp.
How long does it take to make from a seed to a full-sized mature bull kelp?
Yeah, I have no idea. So far, they've been trying it on the same schedule that we're growing the sugar and ribbon kelp.
Yeah, because there's some monsters floating around out there.
Really is. And I think that's, you know, that could be a year or two old. So I don't know. And just the farming techniques are totally different than what we're doing and a lot trickier. So it'll be cool to see that develop over time. I mean, we've got some bull kelp seed out there right now, but it's just a much different, much different strategy, kelp, you know, design.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be really hard to grow kelp or bull kelp because of how the permitting works. You're going to have a really, really big farm to make it viable because you can't put it right on top of it, each other like we do with the ribbon and sugar kelp currently.
So you applied to this permit in a week, and then how did you choose this area in Pop-Off Island? Is there just a certain amount of space that you're allotted, or?
Well, you pick your amount of acreage. I chose mine based on, I'd only did a 1 acre in the very beginning, and then I reapplied for a whole different farm the next year and moved it up to 17. So in the beginning, I just wanted to see if it would work, and I put it out there, and on 1 acre, I had 3 lines, and it grew really impressively. I got really lucky. I was pretty naive in the beginning, like, oh, this is going to be easy. But it has a lot of challenges. The more volume you grow, it's like anything, you know. If you grow 1 row of corn, it's probably going to be pretty simple. And you might think, oh, I could do this a million times. And then you put 100 rows of corn out there, and it totally changes the game and the way you have to harvest, the way you have to plant it and grow it and monitor it. And, yeah, there's a lot of tricks, and we're learning something new every time we go out there.
Yeah, it's crazy. You guys don't have a lot to reference off of. You're kind of inventing the wheel in some respect, it seems like.
Yeah, there's a lot of farms on the East Coast in Maine, and but nobody's really doing it on the scale that we're doing it here. It's much more densely planted than anything they're seeing. On a 9-acre farm over there, they might have 5 lines. And on a 17-acre farm here, we have 57, you know, right now we have 57 400-foot-long lines that are all 7 feet under the water. So we're trying to figure out how to do it and, densely put the grow lines close together and utilize the acreage the best we can because you pay per acre. So.
But is there, like, some sort of calculation? I mean, I don't know anything about this kind of stuff, but is there, like, a photosynthesis calculation or something you have to make?
Well, we're kind of just guessing and trying, you know, like, let's see how close we can put this together. And if that doesn't work, then we'll take a step back. Or, you know, we started off with, like, 10-foot spacing, and then we moved into even bigger than that, like 15-foot spacing, because we thought it'd be hard. And then last year we moved down to four-foot spacing, and this year we have some stuff that's 2.5 feet apart. So there's a lot to learn, though, because there's a lot, you know, you're going to run into more and more problems the closer you put it together. And hopefully the permitting will change a little bit so that you're not forced to try to put so much in a small area so that you can be successful, because there's just so many little things that could happen putting stuff that close together. And then if you give yourself a little bit more room, it grows a lot better too. Have less tangles, lots of different stuff.
Are there any predators or anything? Like, does it change when you add something like that to the ecosystem?
The only thing we've noticed is that the otters really like to hang on the buoys. The ducks really like the mussels that grow on our lines. But no, we haven't had any predator issues as of yet. There is some little bugs down there that eat kelp, and every once in a while you'll see a little hole in a blade, but nothing devastating yet. I think the devastation could come on the hatchery end of getting those little bugs in when the kelp's in the hatchery state.
I gotcha. Yeah, no, like, kelp beetles or anything?
Yeah, not really. I mean, we're not that we're seeing yet. I'm sure it's possible.
Yeah.
I never underestimate the ocean.
Yeah, there is a lot going on in there.
So
I guess the next question in the lineup is, what obstacles did you run into along the way, or any early successes?
Yeah. I think the permitting obstacles were fairly steep in the beginning, but we were the first people to go through a lot of that. So I think that they've worked out a lot of those kinks. You had to wait a long time. Like, as soon as I got done harvesting the first year, I put in an application the next year. As soon as the application period opened, and it took until January to get permitted correctly. So I actually didn't even get my kelp in the water till about 2 months later than I'd like to, the third year that I grew, I guess it would have been. So, yeah. Other than that, figuring out wind, tide, those winds we had the other day didn't fare very well at my site, but it's kind of issues that we knew we might have if we had that kind of storm. So currently my kelp site is in the second year of a 3-year grant from the Department of Energy and ARPA-E that's testing, you know, capabilities of kelp and biofuel, but not in actually turning the kelp into biofuel, just on the cost of growing it and how densely we can populate these lines and the amount of volume we can get out of this site, and then trying to correlate that to a much larger offshore farm. So they tried some different techniques for flotation to keep the kelp at the optimal grow, like, depth.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, you know, between 7 and 10 feet underwater, somewhere in there, 6 and 10 feet. Unfortunately, the amount of flotation we added was a big wind catch and caused a bunch of tangles. And, you know, we probably lost 12 to 13% of the farm the other day, just as far as, like, it rubbed some kelp off. You know, stuff like that's going to happen. As you learn, that's why I was kind of saying that it's an uphill battle right now, because we're doing a lot of the groundwork that people are going to learn from and probably be successful in the future. But in order to see this grow as an economy for Kodiak or Alaska in general, then someone's got to do it. So I'm happy to be on the forefront of that, I guess.
The guinea pig.
Yeah. and it's frustrating at times, too, because you have to use other people's ideas. And this is my first go-round in a grant setting, so I didn't realize how all of it works. And you know, it's cool because I get a lot of gear and I get paid to do some of the things I would be doing on my own. But I also have to do someone else's ideas. And sometimes that doesn't work out. And this is one of those situations. I guess that's a success and a step back.
So when you started out, were you thinking, had just no idea of where you'd be, or were you thinking you had kind of some goals set up?
I mean, I actually think we've kind of met my goals, and we've also surpassed them. I like to think on the bright side of things a lot, so I was always hopeful that it would be really successful, and it's successful at this point. You know, we're making some money doing it. It has a ton of potential. There's a lot of interest. It's a kind of a buzzword right now, kelp farms, and I think it'll help bring some funding to the town. It also has given a lot of employment opportunities to people that might not have had jobs that time of year through the processing. You know, we've had a few people come out and help us at harvest time, and a few people come out and help plant. So it's definitely moving forward in that sense. I'm really happy with where it's gone. I'd like to see more products and more angles than just food, and more people get involved. And I just really like to see the industry grow statewide, but especially for Kodiak. I think we're in a really, really good spot to, you know, we could be the leader for kelp on the entire West Coast quite easily. We have a lot of, you know, a lot of protected water here, and finding the balance between protected areas and not putting these in places where they're huge eyesores, or taking public, you know, use areas away, things like that. That's just going to be the trick. You know, not using sport fishing spots or putting it where people go camping, or you're going to run into issues with, you know, vessel traffic.
That's challenging in a saning,
yeah,
population.
It is, because you really think people, yeah, I mean, people are excited about it, but, you know, there's been several cases of people trying to get permitted for, like, really widely used public areas, and it's kind of too bad because it gave us a little bit of a bad name in the beginning, but at the same time, you know, I understand why they chose that area too, because everybody wants to put something where it's protected from storms, and you have the best chance at being successful. So there's a balance there that we're going to have to find. The good thing is like in most cases, you can drive right over the top of these farms as long as you're not getting caught up on buoys. It's marked at night by some flashing lights that are solar. But I mean, just putting anything anywhere in the ocean, you always stand a chance of anything happening. I mean, you could have a whale swim through the set, you know, it's totally possible, but I don't think it hasn't ever happened yet. And I think that they wouldn't run into any problems because there's no slack lines, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So just trying to think forward and, you know, about what and where and how to put these things together to make the industry.
Is there room for a lot more people to be joining in on this?
Well, currently the market's pretty much saturated, so, and that's just between the two farms. Yeah, I mean, we really hope in the future that there'll be more opportunity for a lot more people, but until that market grows, unfortunately there's not. But that's why I hope they move away, you know, we can move whether it be Blue Evolution or other entities too. I think Blue Evolution is really excited about trying different things too, and they've really proven to me they could be a powerhouse here, and just with the amount of money they've put into Kodiak already, and you know how they want to continue to harvest here and provide processors, and yeah, there's a lot to look forward to, but it has a long ways to go, and that a lot of that's like people need to start eating kelp.
Yeah,
we need to develop more things for the kelp, you know, to be used in, and people have to accept that. And I think we're getting there. Lot of it's just ideas at the moment. So it's awesome to see more and more ideas coming forward. But
yeah, I definitely think of sushi and, you know, the furikake. Yeah. I sprinkle that in my popcorn and things like that. But
yeah, I know. And there's endless uses for it.
Yeah.
It really is. I think a lot of people only think of kelp like what you're mentioning right now, like the nori or the what you wrap sushi in, mm-hmm. you know, put in your rice. And in a lot of ways, it has some of those umami flavors. In a lot of ways, it's totally different from what we're growing now. You know, that's like a pressed product that they, you know, macerated and put together and seasoned. Totally possible to make our kelp taste like that, I think, but really naturally it has a lot of salt, a lot of iodine. The sugar kelp tends to be a little blander than the ribbon, I would think.
Mm-hmm.
I think, but everybody's taste buds are different.
And when you're mentioning different resources, like not food related, that's really interesting too. It's just a bunch of different directions. Like it doesn't have to just be an edible product like other marine harvested products.
Yeah.
Could go. Like you're not going to turn salmon into biofuel, I don't think. I mean, maybe.
Yeah.
And
maybe.
Maybe.
It wouldn't be very good for salmon, but that's the exciting thing about kelp is it's a zero input crop. You know, it doesn't take any fresh water. We can, you know, there's all sorts of good things that it does for the ocean that they're doing a lot of testing on right now, like how much carbon are we pulling out of the atmosphere, and, you know, what's happening to that.
There's, yeah, still in its infancy.
Yeah, it's got a long ways to go.
Do you have any short-term goals here for where you want the business to go, or just the general plan?
As far as my business? No, I think that's just the plan, is just to continue to try to champion seaweed for Alaska and kelp farms in general, but also to try to be cognizant of, you know, other people's uses for the areas that these farms are going to go into, and how to best share those. Because in a lot of ways, this grows from November till May, mid-May, maybe mid-June. So in most ways, it doesn't interfere with any kind of salmon fishing. And when we harvest is typically beginning of May to the end of May. So it's a pretty good downtime for a lot of the processors as well. So, I mean, it just really aligns well with the downtimes of our community. And so I think that there's a ton of potential there to see this prosper, especially here. I'd love to see bioplastics, you know, start getting made, and people getting away from traditional plastics, and just to move forward with all the good things that kelp could do for not only the earth but us.
Yeah, and it's really cool to be bringing something new like that to the community of Kodiak.
Yeah, it's awesome. And like I said, you know, there's like 15 people that worked for the processor last year that didn't have, you know, would have not had jobs that time of year had it not been for that. So it's cool. I mean, I guess I didn't think that we would help employ that many people that fast. And then Blue Evolution on its own has, you know, five, I don't know exactly how many employees there are, but at least five people working on this. There's a full, or at least a half-time position here for the hatchery. So it's providing year-round jobs for some people, and myself included. I was able this year to finally step away from commercial fishing and try to focus on this a little bit more and help bring all of our plans to fruition, I guess.
Yeah, well, just with everything happening this year, it seems like the emphasis on local business and growing things and, you know, the local economy is just, like, it's always been a good message, but it just feels like especially encouraging when things are going in that direction.
Yeah. So this doesn't really have to do with my kelp farm, but I would like to talk to you guys about helping advertise a different business that I'm starting. I'm having a tough time getting it off the ground right now just because I have my kelp harvest in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
But I've started, I've gone through most everything except for the last stage. I'm waiting for the registration for the truck, but I'm starting a curbside recycle pickup business that would offer weekly pickup at your house as long as it's on your property by providing a recycling can and a bag for your cardboard and stuff, just to help promote people recycling, because I know a lot of people don't, because they don't have the time to go up there. So at a pretty minimal fee, between $25 and $30 a month, we're not set on that yet.
So how are people going to be able to reach out to you to sign up for
this? Well,
I built a
website. I'm going to also advertise on social media. I just don't want to get it over my head yet, because I'm not, like I said, I have to kind of do it on my own before I can afford to hire an employee or pay for workman's comp or anything. So I'm a little nervous about that end of it. So I want to be able to do it myself. And I also want to figure out a lot of these kinks that I foresee, wind events and people not, you know, making sure that stuff's not getting blown around them. It's not adding to a litter problem and working against me, if that makes sense.
Or the whole concept of what you're trying to do.
Exactly. But I mean, as far as, I just went around kind of the community and talked to a lot of people, and I'd say 75% of people said they would love it if they could just throw all of their cans, plastic, anything that you can recycle at threshold, into a can and separate their paper and cardboard into a bag so it doesn't get wet, and have somebody pick it up once a week. I think it might work. I think it'll help, and it'll help Threshold, because they're going to still receive the recycling. It's not like I'm opening a recycling center. I'm just providing the service of picking up, sorting, and dropping off recycling for not only households but businesses and possibly some other things down the road I would like to get involved with too.
Cool.
I think I was just adding it to my green resume, I guess.
So for this, you were mostly a commercial fisherman, and now you'd be able to do the kelp farm and this, or how's that work?
Yeah, that's kind of my plan.
Okay.
I'll still always want to go fishing. So I run a boat for crab in Washington for the last 4 years. Help somebody run a boat in the beginning of the season and finish the season for them.
What boat?
The Optimus out of Sitka.
Okay.
I'll probably continue to do that so I can get a little bit of my fill.
Yeah, I'm a summer fisherman too. It's pretty hard to...
You just can't totally give it up.
It's pretty hard to break away from that lifestyle.
Yeah. Yep.
But sounds like you're getting it dialed in, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, we'll see. I just, the kelp's not quite enough to totally rely on. I also run a landing craft here in town for a couple guys, and they're trying to grow that business. So I'll become too busy for one of these. I'd really like the recycling idea. I think it could add some employment opportunities. It's not something that I necessarily want to do. It's just something that I think is a major need for the community. And since Alaska Waste doesn't provide that, so I might as well get established, I guess. I think it's going to push things in the right direction.
That's definitely been a major conversation this year.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Nick, thanks for talking about your current business and your to-be business here.
Yeah.
It's exciting to be just having more community things getting started, and I know that's kind of what the radio station's all about too, so thank you.
Yep. More stuff in the future, let me know.
Okay.
I'd be happy to talk about it more and just educate the community on it. I think it's something a lot of people could get excited about.
Yeah, definitely. Well, thank you, and talk to you later.
All right, thanks.
All right, thanks. Bye. That was Nick Mangini, owner of a local kelp farm here in Kodiak and a soon-to-be recycling business. We here at KMXT support local community and economy, and if you want to find out more ways to do so, check out Nick on social media, or you can donate to this week's spring fund drive at kmxt.org or call 486-3181. Every little bit counts and supports the station to highlight more community gems like this one.